Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Progressive Britain podcast. This is the review show for this week's episode, where we discussed the economics of Brexit and what's really going on in Parliament over the next 2 weeks with our chair, Alison McGovern. I'm Stephanie Lloyd, the Deputy Director of Progress, and I'm joined by Matthew Doyle to discuss, yes, you guessed it, Brexit. But just how much of a shambles this government really is in, and what did Tuesday's votes really all mean? So in the world of politics, there's been a lot going on this week, isn't there, Matthew?
Yeah.
So it's been quite the week. And it's kind of hard to know where we start, really. But I suppose the week really kind of kicked off with a lot of talk about the legal advice that was given to the European Court of Justice on Article 50. So what was in that legal advice? What was the purpose of it?
Well, essentially, this interim ruling, which nearly always ends up being a full ruling, was that the UK has the right to withdraw from the Article 50 process at any stage it wants. And obviously this was a fillip to those of us who want to stop Brexit, because it took away one of the arguments that we didn't somehow have an ability to stop this train that is careering off the cliff. And
yeah, so Theresa May always kind of says, like, this is it, this is what we've done.
Right.
And lots of even kind of some of the kind of more Labour MPs that are kind of going full force with Brexit always say, well, it started now, we can't revoke it. But this actually kind of said that wasn't really true.
Correct. This says actually you can stop it at any time you like. Now, there are complications within that, because what that doesn't mean is that you can get the extension automatically. So sometimes people talk about, well, if we're going to facilitate a people's vote, or for that matter, if there were a general election, then we would need to delay the process. Now, a delay would still require the other 27 governments within the European Union to say yes. And obviously, my view, as is seems to be the consensus view, is that they would allow that. But what this was about specifically was, like, if Theresa May wanted to turn around and say, actually, this is a really bad idea, folks, let's just have a pause and suspend the Article 50 process and withdraw our letter, then she could do that.
Wow. That is quite the step change from what, obviously, there were totally unprecedented scenes in the Commons this week. We saw the government be found in contempt of the House. And that was Geoffrey Cox, who's the Attorney General for...
with his fabulous voice, which I won't try and impersonate, but...
good voice, bad judgment.
Yeah, indeed.
Seems to be what happens. Yeah, so we saw, obviously, the motion had been passed that said, and the House had ruled, that they should publish the legal advice that they'd been given. They didn't do that. So it was an absolute blinder from Keir Starmer this week. I think it's where you see his legal background
for sure
really come into its own in that sense. And then obviously we saw them lose, what, three votes in that day?
And I think there's an interesting thing here, because I do think there is an argument that you can make that actually, just as you have attorney-client privilege in the private world, so you should have attorney-client privilege in government world, because of wanting to ensure that the legal advice that's being given is genuinely the best legal advice, rather than it being written with an eye to the fact that this might end up being public. But the problem here is a symptom of Theresa May's weakness in Parliament. Once she had lost, or rather didn't contest, that initial vote that Parliament said that the legal advice should be published, she was then on a track that was always going to end up at this destination. It was always going to be the case that once she didn't have the votes to turn around and win that argument that actually no, legal advice should be private because that's the best sort of advice to government. Once she couldn't win that argument, then she was always going to end up in this, what ended up being, frankly, an unnecessary, humiliating defeat. She should have been able to assess the situation. And this is one of the funny things about politics, and it's particularly true if we look at what's going to happen with next week's vote. There's really only one skill you need in politics, and that's the ability to count. And the slight problem is what Theresa May has shown throughout this process is an inability to count. She hasn't had the numbers on the legal advice. She doesn't have the numbers for next week. She carries on in this way that gets described as remarkable resilience. But at some point, you have to turn around and say it's actually just frankly delusional.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that I thought was quite interesting was previously up to this vote, they were saying it's in the national interest that we don't make this public. There's a reason why we don't want this to happen, and it's national interest. Parliament said, no, we want to know what this is before we do the vote on Tuesday. Obviously, it was then released Wednesday. And then you saw quite a lot of people go, actually, I don't think this was about the fact it was in the national interest. It was actually more about the fact that what this says is Northern Ireland will be treated differently and it will be in a permanent customs union. I mean, do you think that's going to have a big impact in terms of the votes on Tuesday?
Yeah, but I think there's also another thing that's going on here. Look, any parent will tell you, as soon as you tell the kid that something is secret or they can't have it, then it's going to make them immediately want it. And this was the whole problem where the government, by its daft strategy on this, ramped up this legal advice to basically make people believe there was something in it. In reality, I don't think there was anything in the legal advice that we didn't know already. Like, the problems relating to Northern Ireland are well known and established. What this did give the DUP was, in black and white, in the government's own hand, the evidence that it needs to turn around and say, well, we told you all along that this was the problem.
And I mean, it was unbelievable watching those votes kind of one after the other come in. And then and you could literally just see Geoffrey Cocke just lean back and just be like, why is this what I'm doing with my life?
Well, the only advantage for Geoffrey Cocke is at least the government did agree to publish the legal advice so that he didn't get sent to the prison cell that there is in Elizabeth Tower just under the Big Ben, which is what the punishment would have been potentially.
This is literally my favourite bit that's occurred this week, was the point where Connor turned around in the office and was like, hang on a minute, I've just found out that we should just send him, to the Tower.
Exactly.
I mean, this is the bit that I love about the British politics system, where it's just these odd little throwbacks of the most archaic things in terms
for sure.
of that. I think they should have done it just for the banter.
Just for the lols. But the third one of those votes, of course, was the interesting one as well, which was the Grieve Amendment about essentially giving Parliament more power in the process from now on. And I think actually that third vote will turn out to be the more significant of the three votes rather than the legal advice. The defeat on essentially allowing Parliament to work out how and when it wants to present the options is going to be really significant, and particularly significant, I think, for the People's Vote campaign, because there are a number of people whose support for a People's Vote, I think, is dependent on what has happened in the previous stages. And so getting the, if you like, the choreography of how this rolls out and the sequence that we're going to have to go through of the government being defeated, there being a confidence vote, which I think Theresa May will win because the Tories will fall back in line ultimately when it comes to risking a general election. And then you're in the situation of like, okay, so what is the way forward? For Theresa May, she'll want to just have a symbolic conversation in Brussels and then bring the deal back again, because essentially that's all she can do.
Yeah.
And talk up this element of giving Parliament more control over us, getting in or out of the backstop.
Although that's already not, we saw quite a few of the kind of proper hardline Brexiteers on the Tory benches already tweeting yesterday. Steve Baker was one of them that was like, no one's believing this.
Right.
If it's a treaty, it's a treaty.
Exactly. It doesn't change the fundamentals of the fact that the concern is that once you're in that backstop, then we lose our ability to leave it. And the hard part for Theresa May here is, of course, she has simultaneously got to make the case for the backstop at the same time as arguing that actually the government's hope is we never end up in the backstop, because in theory, the backstop only comes about if we've failed to negotiate a future framework with the rest of the European Union. So the way in which the backstop has ended up dominating this is because of Theresa May's failure to convince people that she can ultimately win the next phase of the negotiations.
Probably no one believes she can win anything. That's the problem at the moment, isn't it, in that sense? And one of the things that I think is quite interesting about the Grieve Amendment, because obviously it means also that they can amend what they come back with, which was obviously not the precedent before that. Do you think, there's quite a lot of talk about people means this is probably means we're going to have a more of a softer Brexit, if that is the case. It looks like the kind of no deal fall off a cliff thing is seeming more unlikely? What's your take on that?
Well, there's never been the votes in Parliament for a no-deal Brexit. But what this does mean potentially is that you will see some of these ideas that people like Nick Bowles and others have floated around a Norway option and so on will come back. Now, there are all sorts of reasons why the Norway option is a red herring in terms of its ability to solve some of the intractable issues that have been at the heart of this. And, you know, at some point, someone's got to turn around and basically say, look, this is not a failure of Tory negotiation on the current plan so far, although you could argue, and I certainly would, that they should have not triggered Article 50 until they actually knew what the hell they wanted to get out of this. But more, the fact of the matter is the internal contradictions are the contradictions of Brexit itself. There is no good version of Brexit. And at some point, the Labour Party, or at least enough of the Labour Party, is going to have to be clear in turning around and saying that, let's be honest, there isn't a better deal to negotiate. There is no good version of Brexit, whether you call it Norway, whether you call it Canada plus plus plus, whether you call it EFTA, whether you call it a jobs first Brexit, whether you call it a red, white and blue Brexit, you know, all these different phrases that have been used. At some point, you just have to come back to the hard reality that there is no good Brexit for this country. And that's why you've got to have a people's vote with Remain on the ballot paper.
Mm, absolutely. I mean, and also, it's not really surprising that people don't really trust them to be able to negotiate much more either, when they couldn't even negotiate the TV debates. They're already off. They're off the table now, not happening.
Yeah, and there was always a weirdness about those debates anyway, though, I think, in terms of the makeup that there was, because we know the history of Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn's positions and the positions that they would supposedly now be advocating. And given everything that he's said, including in the statement in the debate on Monday, it's difficult to see how Jeremy Corbyn would have been able to square his position in a TV debate with what is actually Labour Party policy as passed at party conference. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is that Jeremy Corbyn hasn't answered and chooses not to answer the question that fundamentally we would be better off if we remained in the European Union. And that is a statement that the vast bulk of Labour Party members would agree with, and yet for whatever reason, our leader seems unable to articulate.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what a week it was in terms of watching some of those, and I think next week's going to be even more remarkable with the vote on Tuesday. So this is the bit of time where we get to talk about the pub quiz question. Yeah. So for this week, the question that we asked was, the United Kingdom Independence Party, otherwise known as UKIP, was founded in 1991, but by whom? Do you know, Matthew?
Well, the answer to the question is it was founded by the historian Alan Sked, who led the party at the start and then obviously got taken over by the Nigel Farage tsunami that came later on. Although, of course, we've seen this week now, Nigel Farage has ripped up his membership card of UKIP because of their association with the guy known as Tommy Robinson. Mm. And
they're now too openly racist for him.
Exactly. I think we need to be very careful here. Whilst we welcome the fact that Nigel Farage has agreed on this point, let's not pretend that this was a party that we agreed with or thought was in any way appropriate beforehand. So Nigel Farage's attempts to give himself respectability by denouncing that someone on the far right is not really going to cut the mustard.
It's not, is it? I don't think anyone's believing that one. Thank you so much for today. As always, we need you to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast to make sure it reaches as many people as possible. And you can do that on iTunes, Acast, Spotify now, whatever you get your podcasts. And the Progressive Britain podcast will be back on Tuesday. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Progressive Britain podcast. The music is When in the West by Blue Dot Sessions, licensed under Creative Commons, and this episode was produced by Caroline Crampton.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.